When the Commissioner shut off the holographic image of the hearing, the meeting had not actually concluded. Luo Ji had in fact noticed that when the chair declared the meeting adjourned, a sudden voice had rung out. It was a woman's voice, and while he hadn't been able to make it out clearly, everyone in the assembly had turned in a particular direction. Then Jonathan had turned off the image. He must have noticed it too, but once the chair had adjourned the meeting, Luo Ji, now an ordinary citizen without Wallfacer status, was not eligible to participate, even if it was still in progress. The speaker was Keiko Yamasuki. She said, "Mr. Chair, I have something to say," the chair said. "Dr. Yamasuki, you are not a Wallfacer. You are allowed to attend today's meeting due to your special status, but you do not have the right to speak." None of the representatives seemed interested in her. They were getting up to leave. For them, the entire Wallfacer project was nothing but a footnote in history that they had to spend energy dealing with. But what she said next stopped them in their tracks. She turned to Hines and said, "Wallfacer Bill Hines, I am your wallbreaker." Hines, who was getting up to leave, felt his legs buckle at Yamasuki's words, and he sat down in his chair again. The people in the auditorium glanced at each other and then began to whisper as the blood gradually drained from Hines's face. "I hope you have not all forgotten the significance of that title," Yamasuki said imperiously to the assembly. The chair said, "Yes, we know what a wallbreaker is, but your organization does not exist anymore." "I know," she appeared totally calm, "but as the last member of the ETO, I will fulfill my duty for the Lord."
"I should have known it, Keiko. I should have known," Hines said, his voice trembling. He looked weak. He had known that his wife was a devotee of the ideas of Timothy Leary, and he had seen her fanatical desire to alter the human mind through technological means, but he had never connected it with a deeply hidden hatred of humanity. "First off, I'd like to say that the true goal of your strategic plan was not the elevation of human intelligence. You, more than anyone, are aware that it is utterly impossible for human technology to accomplish this in the foreseeable future because you were the one who discovered the quantum structure of the brain. You know that when the study of the mind reaches the quantum level, the SOFON lockdown on fundamental physics means that scientific research will be like water with no source. It's got no grounding and will never succeed. The mental seal was not just a chance byproduct of your study of the mind. It was the thing you always wanted. That was the ultimate goal of your research." She turned to the assembly. "Now, what I'd like to know from all of you is this. In the years that we've been in hibernation, what happened to the mental seal?"
"It didn't have much of a history," the representative of the European fleet said. "Nearly 50,000 people from National Space Forces voluntarily accepted faith in victory through the mental seal, and they formed a special class in the military known as the Imprinted. Later on, about 10 years after you went into hibernation, the use of the mental seal was found by the International Court of Justice to be a crime, an infringement on the freedom of thought, and the sole mental seal device, the one in the Faith Center, was put into storage. The manufacture and use of that type of equipment was placed under a worldwide ban nearly as strict as nuclear non-proliferation. And in fact, the mental seal was even harder to obtain than nuclear weapons, primarily because of the computer it used. By the time you entered hibernation, computing technology had basically stopped moving forward. The computer used by the mental seal is still a supercomputer today and is inaccessible to ordinary individuals and organizations. Then, Keiko Yamasuki revealed her first piece of substantive information. What you don't know is that there was more than one mental seal device. Five were made, each with its own accompanying supercomputer. The other four Hines secretly handed over to people who had already accepted the seal, the ones you call the imprinted. There were only around 3,000 of them at that time, but they had already formed a tightly knit supranational organization within the militaries of individual countries. Hines did not tell me this. I learned it from the Sophons. The Lord does not care about staunch triumphalism, so we didn't take action.
And how is this significant? The chair asked.
Let's hypothesize, shall we? The mental seal device is not a continuously operating piece of equipment. It's only activated when necessary. Each device can be used for quite a long time, and if they're properly maintained, it will be no problem for them to be used for half a century. If the four devices were used in turn, one run into the ground before the next one is started up, they would have been able to last for 2 centuries, which means that the imprinted may not have died off, but might have endured from generation to generation up to the present day. It's a religion that believes in faith hardened by the mental seal, and its induction ceremony is the voluntary use of the mental seal on your own mind. The representative of the North American fleet said,
Dr. Hines, you have lost your wall-facer status and no longer have the legal power to deceive the world. Would you please tell the Joint Conference the truth? Is your wife, or rather your wall-breaker, telling the truth?
It's true, Hines said with a heavy nod.
That's a crime,
the representative of the Asian fleet said.
Perhaps it is, Hines said, and nodded again. But just like all of you, I don't know whether the imprinted have endured to the present day.
That's not important, the representative of the European fleet said. I think the next step should be to find the mental seal devices that are still around and seal them up or destroy them. As for the imprinted, if they voluntarily accepted the mental seal, then that doesn't appear to have violated the laws of the time. If they applied the mental seal to other volunteers, then they were under the dominance of the faith or belief that they had already received through technical means, so they should not be subjected to punishment. So the only thing we need to do is find the mental seals. The matter of the imprinted might not need to be pursued at all.
That's right. It's not a bad thing for there to be a few people in the Solar Fleet who have absolute faith in victory. At least it won't cause any harm. It should remain a matter of personal privacy, and no one needs to know who they are. Although it's hard to understand why anyone would voluntarily undergo the mental seal today, because humanity's victory is so apparent, the representative of the North American fleet said.
Keiko Yamasuki smiled derisively, revealing a seldom-seen expression that conjured up for the assembly an ancient picture of moonlight reflecting off the scales of a snake in the grass.
You're being naive, she said.
You're being naive, Hines echoed his wife, and deeply bowed his head. She turned once again to her husband.
Hines, you've always hidden your thoughts from me, even before you became a wall-facer.
I was afraid you'd despise me, he said, head still down.
How many times did we look silently into each other's eyes in the bamboo grove in the quiet of the Kyoto night? From your eyes I saw a wallfacer's loneliness, and I saw your desire to speak. How many times did you almost tell me the truth? You wanted to bury your head in my arms, put everything into words through your tears, and obtain total release. But the duty of a wall-facer prevented you.
Deceit, even toward the one you loved the most, was one of your responsibilities. So I could only look into your eyes, in the hope of finding some trace of your true thoughts. If you don't know how many sleepless nights I spent waiting next to you as you slept soundly, waiting for you to talk in your sleep. More often, I carefully observed you, studying your every move and capturing your every look, including the years you were first in hibernation. I recalled every detail about you, not out of longing, but because I wanted to see your true thoughts. For a very long time, I failed. I knew you wore a mask, but I knew nothing of what was below the mask. The years passed, until finally, when you had just awakened and walked through the neural network cloud to my side and I looked into your eyes, I finally understood. I'd matured 8 years, while you were still the you of 8 years before, and so you were exposed. From that moment, I knew the real you, a deep-rooted defeatist and a staunch escapist. Both before and after you became a wallfacer, your sole goal was to achieve an exodus of humanity. Compared to the other wallfacers, your genius lay not in strategic deception, but in concealing and disguising your true world view. But I still don't know how you would achieve this goal through your research into the brain and thoughts. I was confused even when the mental seal came out, all the way up until the moment I entered hibernation when I remembered their eyes, the eyes of those people who had been given the mental stamp. They were like yours. And all of a sudden, I understood an expression of yours that I'd never been able to read before. That was when I broke through to your real strategy. But it was too late to say anything. The representative of the North American fleet said,
"Miss Keiko Yamasuki, I don't think there's anything unusual here. We know the history of the mental seal. In the first group of 50,000 volunteers, the procedure was carried out under the strictest supervision."
"That's right," she said. "But the supervision was only absolutely effective so far as the content of the faith proposition was concerned. The mental seal itself was much harder to supervise."
"But the literature indicates that the supervision of the technical details of the mental seal was very strict as well, and it underwent a large number of tests before it was put into operation," the chair said. Yamasuki shook her head.
"The mental seal is an incredibly complicated piece of equipment. Any supervision will have gaps, specifically one tiny minus sign out of hundreds of millions of lines of code. Even the Sophons didn't detect it."
"A minus sign?"
"When the neural circuit model for judging a proposition to be true was discovered, Hines also discovered the model for judging a proposition to be false. That was what he needed. He concealed this discovery from everyone, including me. It wasn't difficult because the two models were highly similar. It manifested as the direction of flow of a key signal in the neuron transmission model, and in the mathematical model of the mental seal, it was represented by a sign. Positive for true, negative for false. Working in extreme secrecy, Hines manipulated this sign in the mental seal's control software. In all five devices, the sign was negative." A deathly silence fell over the auditorium. A silence that had manifested only once before during a PDC wallfacer hearing 2 centuries ago, when Ray Diaz had shown off the cradle on his wrist and had told the assembly that the device receiving the anti-trigger signal was nearby.
"Dr. Hines, what have you done?" The chair turned toward him in anger. Hines raised his head, and everyone could see that his pallid face had returned to normal. His voice was calm and even. "I admit that I underestimated the power of humanity.
The progress that you've made is truly unbelievable. I have seen it, and I believe it, and I also believe that victory in the war belongs to humanity. This faith is as steadfast as if it had been imprinted by the mental stamp. The defeatism and escapism of 2 centuries ago is truly ridiculous. However, Mr. Chair and representatives, I would like to say to the world that it is impossible to make me repent of what I have done.
You still think you shouldn't repent?
The representative of the Asian fleet demanded angrily. Hines raised his head.
It's not a question of should. It's an impossibility. I used the mental seal to imprint this proposition on myself. Everything about my wall-facer plan is entirely correct.
The assembly exchanged amazed glances, and Yamasuki even turned to her husband with the same expression. Hines flashed her a small smile and nodded.
Yes, dear, if you'll permit me to call you that.
Only by doing that could I obtain the spiritual strength necessary to execute the plan. Yes, right now I believe all that I've done is correct. I absolutely believe it, regardless of what reality says. I used the mental seal to turn myself into my own God, and God can't repent.
In the not-too-distant future, when the Trisolaran invaders surrender to a more powerful human civilization, will you still think that?
The chair asked, with a look in his eyes that was more curious than amazed. Hines nodded earnestly.
I'll still think that I'm right. Everything about my wall-facer plan is entirely correct. Of course, in the face of the facts, I'll be put through a hell of a torture.
He turned to his wife.
Dear, you know I've already suffered that torture once when I believed that water was toxic. Let's come back to the present day, the representative of the North American fleet said, interrupting everyone's whispered discussions. It's just speculation that the imprinted have endured. It's been over 170 years after all. If a class or organization with such an absolute faith in defeatism exists, why haven't there been any signs of it?
There are 2 possibilities, the representative of the European fleet said. One is that the mental seal vanished long ago, and this is just a false alarm, the representative of the Asian fleet completed his thought. But there's another possibility. The most frightening thing about the situation is the fact that there aren't any signs. Luo Ji and Shi Qiang walked through the underground city shaded by the tree-shaped structures as streams of cars flew through the gaps in the sky above them. Because the buildings were leaves hanging in the air, the ground was wide open, and the widely spaced trunks of the giant trees meant there was no sense of streets, just a rolling plaza dotted with tree trunks. The environment was wonderful. The wide swathes of grasses, forests of actual trees, and fresh air all made it look, at first glance, like a beautiful countryside. Pedestrians passed through in shining clothes like glowing ants. Luo Ji was impressed to no end by the urban design that elevated modern noise and crowdedness into the air and let the ground return to nature. Here there was no shadow of the war, only human comforts and pleasures. Before they had got far, he heard a woman's gentle voice. Is that Mr. Luo Ji? He looked round and found that the voice was coming from a billboard on the grass at the side of the road. An attractive woman dressed in a uniform was looking at him from the moving image.
I am, he said with a nod.
Hello. I am Financial Counselor 8065 of the General Banking System. Welcome to our era. I will now inform you of your current financial situation.
As she spoke, a table of data appeared beside her.
These are your financial records for year 9 of the crisis era, including deposits at the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China and the China Construction Bank. There are investments in quoted securities as well, but those items may have been partially lost during the Great Ravine.
How does she know I'm here? He whispered.
Sher Chiang said,
A chip's been implanted in your left arm. Don't worry, these days everyone's got one. It's like an ID card. All billboards can recognize you. Ads are all personalized now, so no matter where you go, everything on the billboards is showing just for you.
Apparently, hearing Sher Chiang's words, the councillor said, Sir, this isn't an advertisement. It's a service from the general banking system.
How much do I have on deposit?
Luo Ji asked. A highly complicated chart appeared next to the councillor. This is the status of all your interest-bearing accounts since year 9 of the crisis era. It's fairly complicated, but you can access it in your personal information area from now on. Another simpler chart popped up. This is your current financial situation in all of the various subsystems of the general banking system.
Luo Ji had no concept of what those figures meant and asked blankly, That's how much? My boy, you're a rich man, Sher Chiang said, slapping him vigorously. I may not have as much as you, but I've still got money. Huh? 2 centuries of interest. It's a real long-term investment. Pauper to tycoon. I only regret not saving a little more.
Well, are you sure there's nothing wrong? Luo Ji asked skeptically.
Hmm?
The big eyes of the councillor looked at Luo Ji quizzically.
It's been more than 180 years. Wasn't there any inflation? Did the finance system really just continue on smoothly?
You're overthinking it, Sher Chiang said, taking a pack of cigarettes out of his pocket.
Luo Ji knew then that tobacco was still around, but when Sher Chiang took one out, he was able to puff out clouds of smoke without lighting it. The councillor replied,
There were many rounds of inflation during the Great Ravine, and the finance and credit systems came close to collapse. But according to current laws, interest on the deposits of hibernators is calculated according to a special formula that excludes the Great Ravine, and instead transfers the deposit amount over to the financial level of the post-ravine period and resumes calculating interest from there.
Wow, that's some preferential treatment, Luo Ji exclaimed. My boy, these are good times, Sher Chiang said, blowing out smoke. Then, raising his still-burning cigarette, he said, Except the cigarettes are terrible.
Mr. Luo Ji, this is just an opportunity for us to get acquainted. When it's convenient for you, we can discuss your personal financial arrangements and investment plan. If there's nothing else, then I'll say goodbye.
The councillor smiled and waved goodbye.
I've got one question, he said quickly. He didn't know what to call young women in this era, and he didn't want to risk making a mistake by addressing her improperly, so he simply said, I'm not too familiar with this era, so please forgive me if my question is offensive to you.
The councillor smiled and said,
Not a problem. Our responsibility is to help you get acquainted with this era as quickly as possible.
Are you a real person or a robot? Or are you a program?
The question didn't faze the councillor. She replied,
Of course I'm a real person. Could a computer handle services as complicated as this?
After the woman on the billboard disappeared, Luo Ji said to Sher Chiang,
Darsher, there are some things I find hard to understand. This is an age that has invented perpetual motion and can synthesize grain, but computer technology doesn't seem to have advanced at all.
Artificial intelligence can't even handle personal finance.
What perpetual motion? You mean a perpetual motion machine? Shi Chang said.
Yeah, it signifies unlimited energy. Shi Chang looked around him.
Where?
Luo Ji pointed up to the stream of traffic. Those flying cars. Do they consume oil or batteries? Shi Chang shook his head.
Neither. Earth's oil was pumped dry. Those cars can fly forever without batteries and they'll never run out of power. They're pretty awesome. I'm thinking of getting one myself.
How can you be so unmoved by a technological miracle? Unlimited power for humanity. This is as big an event as when Pan Gu created the heavens and the earth. Don't you realize what a magnificent age this is? Shi Chang tossed aside the cigarette butt. Then, thinking better of it, reached down and retrieved it from the grass and threw it into a nearby garbage can.
I'm unmoved. You're an intellectual whose imagination has gotten away from him. The technology is something we actually had in our era.
You've got to be kidding.
I don't understand most tech, but I do know a bit about this one thing in particular because, as it happens, I once had occasion to use a police bug that had no batteries but never ran out of power. You know how it worked? It was powered remotely by microwaves. That's what electricity is today, although the methods are a little different from our day.
Luo Ji stopped and stared at Shi Chang for a while, then up at the flying cars in the air. He thought about the heating glass and finally understood. It was just a wireless power supply. The power source emitted electricity in the form of microwaves or other EM radiation to form an electric field over a certain space, allowing any equipment within it to draw power through an antenna or resonant coil. Like Shi Chang had said, even 2 centuries ago this technology was entirely ordinary. The only reason it hadn't been commonplace was because the power loss was too great. Only a small portion of the power emitted into a space could be used, but the majority was lost. In this era, however, mature controlled fusion technology meant that energy sources had been greatly enriched to the point that losses from wireless power supplies were acceptable. And the synthetic grain? Can't they synthesize grain? Luo Ji asked.
I'm not really sure about that. Grain is still grown from seed, it's just that it's grown in factories, in those cultivation tank things. Crops are all genetically modified, and I've heard that wheat grows just an ear with no stalk, and it grows pretty quickly because of the strong artificial sunlight and other things like intense growth-inducing radiation. A season of wheat and rice can be harvested in a week, so from the outside it looks just like it's produced on a production line.
Oh. Luo Ji punctuated his thought with an extended sigh, as the gorgeous bubbles before his eyes burst to reveal the true face of the world, and he knew that in this great new era, sophons still floated everywhere, and human science was still deadlocked. Existing technology could never cross the line set down by the sophons.
And the spacecraft that can reach 15% of light speed? Well, that's true. When those warships mobilize, it's like a tiny sun in the sky. And their space weapons, the day before yesterday I saw a news report on TV about an Asian fleet exercise. A laser cannon swept a target ship as big as a carrier. Half of that iron guy evaporated like a chunk of ice, and the other half exploded like fireworks in a shower of sparkling molten steel. And there are rail guns that can fire 100 iron spheres a second, each the size of a football, at tens of kilometres per second. In a few minutes they can flatten a mountain on Mars. So even though there isn't any of your perpetual motion, with these technologies, humanity is more than capable of putting down the Trisolaran fleet.
Shi Qiang handed Luo Ji a cigarette and taught him how to twist the filter tip to light it. They smoked and watched the snow-white swirls drift upward.
Anyway, my boy, these are good times.
Yes, good times. Luo Ji had hardly finished speaking when Shi Qiang pounced on him and the two of them tumbled onto the grass a few meters away, hearing a loud noise at their heels as a flying car smashed into the spot where they had just been standing. Luo Ji felt the impact of the blast, and metal debris whizzed overhead, taking out half the billboard and sending the transparent glass tubes of the display crashing to the ground. While he was still on the ground with a dizzy head and a black eye, Shi Qiang leapt up and ran over to the flying car. Its disc-shaped body was entirely broken and deformed, but due to the lack of onboard fuel, it hadn't caught fire. There was only the sound of sparks crackling in the twisted metal.
"There's no one in the car," Shi Qiang said to Luo Ji, who was limping over. "Da Shi, you saved my life again," Luo Ji said, leaning on his shoulder and massaging his injured leg. "I don't know how many times I'll have to. You really ought to grow some sense and a few more eyes." He pointed to the totaled flying car. "Remind you of anything?"
Luo Ji thought about that occasion 2 centuries before and shivered involuntarily. Lots of pedestrians crowded round, the scenes of terror on their clothing flashing as one. 2 police cars landed, sirens blaring, and several officers got out to form a line around the broken car. Their uniforms flashed like the police light, drowning out the crowd's clothing with their brightness. The one officer who came over to Shi Qiang and Luo Ji had clothing so bright they had to shut their eyes.
"You were right there when the car fell. You aren't hurt, are you?" he said with concern. He evidently could see that the two of them were hibernators, because he made an effort to speak ancient Chinese.
Before Luo Ji could answer, Shi Qiang pulled the officer who had asked the question across the tape and out of the crowd. Once they had got away, the officer's uniform stopped flashing.
"You need to check up on this. It might be an assassination attempt," he said.
The officer laughed.
"Really? It's just a traffic accident." "We want to report it."
"Are you sure?"
"Of course, we're reporting it."
"You're making a big deal out of it."
"You may have been startled, but it really was a traffic accident. However, according to the law, if you insist on reporting it, we insist."
The officer pressed a display area on his sleeve. It popped up an information window, which he looked over and then said,
"It's been reported. For the next 48 hours, the police will track you, but this requires your agreement." "We agree. We might still be in danger."
The officer laughed again.
"It's really a common occurrence." "A common occurrence. Let me ask you, on average, how many traffic accidents of this kind take place in this city every month?"
"There were 6 or 7 all of last year."
"I'll have you know, officer, in our time, this city had more than that every day." "Cars all ran on the ground in your day. I can't even imagine how dangerous that was." "Well, you're now in the police surveillance system. You'll be notified of any progress on your case, but please believe me, this is an ordinary traffic accident. Whether or not you filed a report, you would still receive compensation."
After they left the police and the scene of the accident behind, Shi Qiang said to Luo Ji,
"We'd better go back to my place. I don't feel at ease when I'm outside. It's not far. We probably should walk back. Taxis are unmanned, so it's not safe."
"But hasn't the ETO been destroyed?" Luo Ji asked, looking about him. Off in the distance, the fallen car had been lifted up by a larger flying car.
The crowd had dispersed and the police car had left. A municipal works vehicle had landed, and several workmen had got out to gather scattered debris and begin repairs to the ground, which had been damaged by the crash. Following the small commotion, the city had returned to its normal, pleasing calm.
"Perhaps it has, but you've got to trust my intuition, my boy.
I'm no longer a wall-facer."
"That car didn't seem to think so. While we're walking, pay attention to the cars above you."
They kept to the shade of the tree-like buildings as much as possible, and crossed any open spaces they reached at a run. Soon they arrived at a broad plaza, and Sher Chiang said,
"My place is just opposite. It's too far to go around, so we'll have to make a run for it."
"Isn't that being a little paranoid? Maybe it was just a traffic accident."
"That's a maybe, though. There's nothing wrong with being careful. See that sculpture in the centre of the plaza? If anything happens, we can hide there."